Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Anthony Slater, nice enough to apply for the job of covering the Golden State Warriors, and he covers the rest of the NBA as well. And we get to talk to him here on 95.7 The Game. Always appreciate your time. Anthony Slater, how you doing, pal?
I'm good. I'm in Phoenix. I actually might go out and watch the Arizona Diamondbacks tonight, but I think they've lost 18 in a row.
They're just giving away tickets at this point. You should be able to walk in there for free and say you should thank me for being here.
I was just looking at SeatGeek. I won't get in for free, but let me tell you, it's not too much to walk into that building.
There you go. $6 is all the Diamondbacks should be asking anyone.
You could walk in and play shortstop.
Anthony, obviously, you know, the ripple effects of yesterday are being felt far and wide around the NBA. We got plenty of ping pong balls and some Joe Lacob interviews with Tim Kawakami to get into, but we got to start, I think, with Ben Simmons, who is having as bad of a day as any athlete has had a day after a game in a real, real long time. Do you see a solution?
Yeah, trading him this summer, it seems like. I mean, that writing is kind of on the wall. I mean, they could, if Daryl Morey is a guy who usually, he's not really a sell low guy, and you would be selling low on Ben Simmons if you traded him this summer. So maybe there's a thought of bringing it back and trying to make the concoction work again. If Ben Simmons kind of resuscitates his value a bit, trading him at a time where you're not in the bad position. But I think we've seen it now over the last few years. Him and Embiid don't necessarily work, and it's becoming more obvious. As Embiid has stretched out his game and does shoot mid-range, does shoot the three, does do some more stuff, Ben Simmons, not only does he only live 1 foot from the hoop, but he's not even doing that very well anymore either. I mean, he's just not shooting at all. So I think if there's something on the table that they believe can make them better next season, not just like a giveaway Ben Simmons trade, I do think they'll pull the trigger this summer.
What exactly, though, is the lure for another team whose first job is to figure out if he's ever going to be willing to shoot the basketball at any point?
The talent, the defensive talent. I mean, you finished second in defensive player of the year. I look at a team like Portland, let's say you flipped him and McCollum. I think that makes Portland more interesting. You talk about Portland has a 29th ranked defense this season. They've always lacked wing size and defensive versatility. They've always kind of lacked an extra passer next to Damian Lillard, who kind of, maybe you set a screen on the short roll. That's why they've always been obsessed with Draymond Green, essentially. Ben Simmons could be kind of Portland's Draymond Green. Now, what you're saying is right. You have to bring him in and try to fix his offensive game, fix his free throws. And the free throws seem to be seeping in everywhere. When he shoots 32%, I think, from the line in the playoffs, and then kind of start being afraid to get to the line. Now, you ask from Philly's perspective on that, though, is McCollum the right answer for what they're looking for? Do assets have to be attached either way? Those are deeper questions, and we could talk about other guys around the league, but I do think there's still a lure of Ben Simmons, the idea of what he could do for you defensively, and still kind of as like a 6'10" passer.
Let's put the Philadelphia failure aside for 1 second. And just in terms of what the Atlanta Hawks are, should we be taking them seriously in this Eastern Conference Finals? Or is this a team that's only here because of the strange flaws and unfortunate injuries to the number one seed?
No, I think we should take them serious because I didn't really take them serious in the last series. And, you know, they were kind of ready to take punches and counter punches and come back from 25 down. That was the impressive part. Like, they won game five and game seven in Philadelphia. They came back from 25 down. It felt like Philly was the better. I still kind of think the Sixers are the better team, but Atlanta was kind of just like the tougher, readier team. And, you know, we talk about flaws and even superstar flaws. Like, Milwaukee to me is still beatable, and Giannis is, you can definitely kind of construct defensive game plans that can throw Milwaukee completely off its game. I mean, they were super impressive to take down Brooklyn, but I mean, they took down a very, very injured top seed, essentially. So I don't think – I'm not too impressed by either team. I would favor Milwaukee. I don't think Atlanta really has much of a defensive answer to Giannis, but sure. I mean, if Atlanta's up 2-1 with a game four in Atlanta come, you know, next weekend, would any of us be that stunned?
I don't think so, based on what we've seen. I don't think so. When you got an unafraid star who's a shooter – good things can happen. Look at what happened to the Warriors, obviously. Not that Trae Young and Steph Curry have a straight line between the two, but you know what I mean. Anthony Slater here on 95.7 The Game. So, look, obviously Kevin Durant wanted to get to the NBA Finals. There's no doubt about that. But in an odd and strange way, as we've watched him try to chase whatever is going to make him happy, the fact that there seems to be more house credit earned in a glorious defeat than he had in overwhelming NBA Finals wins with the Warriors, do you think Durant's mind is a little bit more at ease with the unfair criticism he feels that he's gotten in his career and maybe is quieted down this Monday?
I don't know. I'm not. I learned long ago covering Kevin Durant for 7 years not to predict what he's necessarily thinking on any particular day. So I don't know if that's quieted in his mind. But I will say I felt like he was on the path to this in his final playoffs with the Warriors. Remember what he did in that Clippers series, into that Rockets series where he initially hurt the bottom of the calf? We were starting to kind of talk about him as the best player in the world. LeBron had gone to L.A. and they had flamed out that first season. KD had averaged something like 40 in the last four games of that Clippers series. So what's more impressive to me is that he's, you know, doing this off the Achilles. I thought the moment he tore it, like, he'd never get back to where we thought, you know, at the time we thought, even the last Warriors game, I mean, he came in after missing, what, like 6 weeks or something like that, and he had like 11 points before he tore the Achilles. So it's just, I think more than anything, it's cool for him to see, and it's cool for the basketball world to see that, like, he probably has a few more good years of, like, absolute peak prime Kevin Durant. And even early in the season when he kept getting like little injuries, I was doubting we were ever going to see that.
Yeah, and don't you think in a weird way, Anthony, this is good for Klay Thompson to see? Because 48 minutes for KD in game 5, 40 minutes in game 6, and then 53 minutes in game 7. It's 141 minutes over 3 games. That might be the largest 3-game workload the NBA has seen from anyone in several years, much less a guy coming off an Achilles 2 years ago. So I look at that as Klay Thompson should have watched that with maybe more excitement than anybody.
Yeah, and Klay Thompson, you know, when we talked to him this season, discussed being encouraged not by what you're talking about with Durant, but just by the fact that, like, on opening night, Kevin Durant had a dunk and, like, looked, oh, wow, he had, like, some explosion off that leg. For KD to complete his season like that is a good sign. But what I would say, Kevin Durant, because of the pandemic, didn't actually return to play, I think, for like, you know, 17, 18 months. Like, that's when he finally made his debut. He probably would have been more ready, but the season got pushed back. Klay, opening night next season, I think it's like 10.5 months from Klay Thompson's surgery. So if you're looking more towards, like, when might Klay be back to, like, that version of Klay, I think we're talking mid-season to next playoffs is probably on the optimistic side, because you talk to the guys with Achilles and, you know, ACL, which, you know, Klay's also dealing with, although he's nearly 2 years into that. You kind of start to feel more like yourself towards the end of that first season back, sometimes not even until the second season back.
So what you're saying then on Thompson is that you're looking at a guy who's going to miss somewhere between 2.5 and 3 full years of him. How many players in the history of the league have missed that much time and come back and been close to the same guy. Are there comps for him?
I'm trying. I mean, that's a research project right there. Can we think of anybody? I mean, the good signs are like the Dominique Wilkins stories, where this is when medicine wasn't as good, and he came back from an Achilles tear. But yeah, just like, I mean, I can give you a bad tale, which would be DeMarcus Cousins, who I'm watching currently in this Phoenix Clipper series. But when he went Achilles ACL, he did it kind of the flip side of Clay. He has never really looked like himself. I'm watching him run yesterday, and he's still kind of dragging his legs around. Not to make Warriors fans worry enough, but I can't necessarily currently think of somebody who went major injury, and then came back and looked quite like themselves.
I just don't know that there's that many examples of people getting hurt in that way, and frankly, DeMarcus was never that spry. As far as the plan for this offseason, because Clay's going to come back eventually, and hopefully he'll be good. There's nothing they can really do about that. You have generally been a proponent of adding veterans to the team. I assume you heard what Joe Lacob had to say about a veteran with a big contract. Did that surprise you at all? And I don't know, how did it hit your ears?
Oh, this is what I've always thought they're most likely to do this summer, which is add veterans, but add them with the mid-level, add them on the minimum. Really what, in some ways, they tried to do last offseason and struck out when, they went after Gasol, they went after Ibaka, they went after Nicholas Batum. They really thought Nicholas Batum was going to be on this roster and would have really had the Michael Mulder spot, because that was going to be the last guy they were going to add. It didn't work out, they think, this summer. Actually, not only do they think this summer that they'll be able to win some of those negotiating battles now that Clay's back and they have a potential path to the title, I think they're committed to no matter what, if they strike out on their number one, like making sure they get a guy who's a bit more proven. Now, if a big swing is available, I do think that they look at the trade market. But when they said they were adding more veterans, even when Bob Myers said it was pressure, I never thought that meant, well, they're definitely, going to add a $25 million per year dude with a trade.
Do you have any names in mind for those mid-level sort of guys?
Yeah, Batum, once again, is a free agent. I don't know if he'll want to go back to the Clippers. He's had a really good season there. I'd like Kelly Olynyk, if he would be willing to sit in that salary range. That's always the question with a lot of these guys. But, Olynyk, they've mentioned the need for a stretch five. I do think you want a shooting center to have next to Draymond Green at times. And Olynyk is tougher than maybe his reputation might suggest, and he's been in those playoff moments. That's something Bob Myers mentioned in his press conference. They want veterans who have played in playoff series, who have proven they can be, winning components. Like Wes Matthews is another name I'd throw out there. Rudy Gay. They've talked about playmaking point guard. I think Derrick Rose has probably played himself out of that salary slot, but he's a guy I know in the past that they've, at least kicked the tires on. There's really like probably 25 other names, but
No, those are good ones.
Anthony Slater here on 95.7 The Game. So has anything happened to draw Kelly Oubre Jr. closer to returning or further away from returning since the last time we talked to you?
It's probably the same. I would very much predict he isn't back. You already see out there reports of different teams being somewhat interested in him. Not only does that tell you that, he might have somewhat of a market, but I think it also just it's probably from Oubre's side of things, like, trying to drum up interest because he knows he's, probably for sure not coming back to the Warriors on any type of beefy salary or expected to have some role. If Kelly Oubre at the end of the day says, look, I'll come back on a bargain, on a short deal, and I'm willing to come off the bench and basically be a backup power forward, then I think the Warriors would be interested. But nothing about covering Kelly Oubre for a season makes me think he's ready to take either that role or that salary number with the Warriors.
Quickly, do you think there's any chance they'll be able to somehow sign and trade him or something to that effect?
So their hope would be that Kelly Oubre actually does get a payday, on the market in the scenario you're talking about, because the bigger salary number he gets, that means the bigger trade exception the Warriors could get. And it's a pretty easy no-brainer move for them if the other team's willing, where it's what Boston did with Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward agreed to sign with the Hornets. The Celtics were going to lose him, but they called up the Hornets and said, hey, if we give you a future second-round pick, will you just make this a sign-in trade so we can get a full Gordon Hayward-sized trade exception? And that's what they used to get Evan Fournier at the deadline. So the Warriors would just call whoever's going to sign him, hoping that, you know, Oubre signed a somewhat bigger salary and just say something like, hey, here's a future second-round pick. And they basically have, let's say, a $14 million trade exception, something like that.
So we know that the Warriors are sending Rick Welts to represent them at the lottery, and he has meant very good things for the Warriors. If he comes back with two lottery picks, though, I don't know if he's allowed to retire anymore. And I don't even care where they are. Like, two picks in the lottery for the Warriors will be interesting. I loved your column about how, you know, the Warriors possibly hitting the mega Powerball, the best case scenario of their own pick happening in the top three, and then top three or four, and then Milwaukee's pick also conveying to them, or excuse me, Minnesota's pick conveying to them. The chances are, as you described, minuscule, but are you ready to go to Vegas and just start partying if that indeed does happen?
I would be ready to take Rick Welts to Vegas if that happens. Yeah, 1 in 2,000 that, like, the 1 in 4 scenario would work its way out. I mean, to me, I'm really looking at the Minnesota pick. Because there's only a 2-point-something% chance that they jump up with their own, but 9% chance Minnesota's the fourth pick, and then it's somewhere in like the 20% range on both, I think, 7 and 8. So, and then a 27% chance they don't have it. And if they don't have it, I think that changes their summer a little bit, and that's if Minnesota jumps into the top three, they wouldn't have it. So that, to me, is the drama of the night, and kind of changes the complexion of the offseason a little bit.
Like you said in your column, if that first envelope opens and the Warriors aren't on it, hide the women and children. It's going to be a party. That's all I'm saying. Thank you very much, Anthony. Always a pleasure talking with you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.